people have a very negative view of cannabis, but my experience when I started using cannabis in Canada was that I was totally wrong in everything that I had thought about cannabis.
Welcome to the Cannabis Health Magazine podcast, What's Your Why? My name is Hannah Deacon and I'm joined today with Professor Mike Barnes. We will be discovering the reason why people we're speaking to have such an interest in cannabis. What motivates them? Who were they before they came to this industry? How do they think things could be better for patients? We're taking an in-depth look into what makes these people tick with an informal conversation which won't focus on graphs or commercial outlooks, but what drives them and why cannabis and the part that they play in bringing it to the UK matters to them.
Again, I'm Mike Barnes, and today we welcome Ryan Macrino, who's now Chief Executive of Sativa Learning, which we can talk about a little later on. But first, Ryan, we wanted to find out a little bit about you, a little bit before you got into cannabis, then why you did, and your experience that we can explore about Canada and such like. So maybe start off with a little bit about background. Where did you start off?
First of all, thanks for having me on. Really, really great to see you both first in person. So I studied biomedical science at Queen's University in Belfast and afterwards went on to work as a toxicology scientist for quite a big clinical diagnostics company. And I was part of a small team of scientists who developed testing kits for drugs of abuse. So this could be anything from recreational drugs, prescription drugs, these new designer drugs that were coming out quite a while ago. And really, you would just take a urine or a blood sample from a patient and you would be able to test for a variety of different drugs. And cannabis was one of them. So we did test for THC. But interestingly, we worked on one of the first commercially available testing kits for synthetic cannabis. I don't know if you remember, probably around 2010, maybe before that, there were synthetic cannabis being sold as legal highs under the name Spice and K2. Mm. And they were really, really dangerous. They caused a lot of problems, some serious addiction, overdose, death as well. Nothing like cannabis at all. And it caused a really big problem. So we created the test for what was, rather than testing for THC, we were testing for JWH, which stands for John William Huffman. So he is the an American organic chemist. And in the 80s, his team were responsible for synthesizing close to 500 different types of synthetic cannabinoids for medical research purposes. And unfortunately for him and his team, that was kind of hijacked by these rogue chemists. Who realized that they could take these synthetic cannabinoids, spray them onto some sort of dried plant matter and sell them as legal highs. So big problem at the time.
What did JWH hope to, what was his therapeutic target originally for these synthetics and what did he hope to, would come from them?
Honestly, I'm not too sure. I just know it was for medical research at the time. Okay. They synthesized close to 500. Pfizer.
Was it about replicating the plant in a synthetic way to make drugs?
Pretty much. Yeah. Okay. Pfizer were responsible for creating other synthetic cannabinoids. And then Raphael Mishulam, who's considered the grandfather of cannabis research, him and his team also synthesized other cannabinoids under the prefix HU, and Pfizer was CP, I think. So there's maybe around 500 or so. And it was specifically JWH-18 and JWH-250 that somehow caught the attention of these organic chemists who then went on to spray them onto plant matter and sell them to people to get high. Yeah, so it was a massive problem at the time. And we created that kit to test for them, which was very, very interesting work. I was really interested in drugs of abuse, you know, the reasons why people take drugs and the effects they had. But I'll be very honest, I did not enjoy working in the lab, repeating experiments over and over again. It just really wasn't for me. So I did that for about 2 years. And at the time, all I really wanted to do was go traveling. That's exactly what I did. Saved up a bit of money, went off, did the usual backpacker thing through Asia, went to live in New Zealand for a year and around America, Mexico, and went back to live in Australia for a year. Earning
money in bars and such like?
Pretty much, yeah. Just picking up work wherever I could and saving up for the next trip. Career-wise, didn't do anything really of note.
Mm.
But I ended up then in Vancouver in February 2017. And that's where my kind of interest for cannabis was really reignited at the time. So Vancouver have had some sort of, not Vancouver, sorry, Canada have had some sort of medical cannabis program from around 2001, I believe. They've had a few different revisions of this program. So medical cannabis is available, but at the time in Vancouver, there was a huge grey market. Sometimes people call it the legacy market. And we can talk a little bit more later on about how the grey market differs from the black market and the legal market. But essentially at that time in Vancouver, there were around 100 or so federally illegal cannabis dispensaries, which were given business licenses from the city of Vancouver. So they were allowed to operate as a business. They had to meet certain zoning requirements and things like that, but the sale of cannabis was still illegal. So much like other places and other industries involved with cannabis, it was very, very complex, very, very confusing. But it really opened my eyes to kind of a different way of life, let's say. You know, they're very cannabis friendly compared to the UK and Ireland. It was just a very interesting time to be there. At the time, worked as a IT recruitment consultant, just another job. I thought I'll do this for a while, see what happens. I can't say I was very good at it, but I learned a lot from it. It really taught me the power of networking and how to kind of meet people and expand your network. And at the time, we were looking after some cannabis companies and looking for some candidates for them. And it kind of got me thinking, the law was about to change. The Cannabis Act, Bill C-45, was about to come into play. And I just thought it was a really good opportunity to look towards the cannabis industry again and try and find work in the cannabis industry. And I just focused my efforts solely applying to all sorts of cannabis positions to try and find work in the industry. And eventually in September 2017, this was a month before they legalized non-medical cannabis, I started work for the government in their cannabis customer care team. So we were responsible. This was British Columbia's first ever cannabis customer care team, responsible for answering all calls from the public regarding the change in law. So you can imagine, if we were to legalize cannabis here tomorrow, there would be a lot of questions from people. So we were answering questions about absolutely everything, you know, from a lot of change management. People had been used to the gray market and they now had to get used to the legal market. So there were a lot of differences. There were a lot of complaints about how the government handled the rollout, complaints about products, pricing, different things like that. And sometimes you would get calls from grannies and grandas who knew that it was going to be legal and wanted to know how to smoke weed. So it was a pretty interesting job. I did that for a few months, moved into a team lead position. And eventually a few months after that, I made my way into the new store training team. So we would travel to the location of new government cannabis dispensaries and train the staff on everything to do with cannabis. It wasn't 100% cannabis training. You know, there was some customer service, how to use the tills, how to operate in retail stores.
Were the cannabis stores all in British Columbia all government stores, or were they private?
There was a mixture of both. A
mixture of both.
Yeah. So you could get a license from the government to operate a private store, but the government had a monopoly on cannabis distribution. So effectively, the licensed producers, you know, the big producers like Aurora, Tilray, Canopy Growth, they were responsible for cultivating the cannabis. It would all get sent, packaged and sent to the government distribution center. And from there, it would go into three channels: government online sales, government retail stores, and private stores. So I was solely responsible for looking after the government stores. So it was a great job. I absolutely loved that job. I got to travel to places in British Columbia that there's no other reason to really visit, meet some really cool people, and just talk about cannabis. We would stay with them for at least a week, set up in a hotel conference room and train them kind of in a classroom environment. Yeah, very, very thorough training. And sometimes we would go back and help them set up the store, you know, set up where things were laid out in the store, run through kind of role plays of customer scenarios you might come into and different things like that. So really interesting job. Absolutely love that job.
How long did it take you, if I be so bold, to learn that? Because teaching for a week on cannabis, it takes a lot of knowledge for you.
Yeah.
So who taught you? Was the government set up there for training the trainers?
Yeah, there was training when we first started. At the time, I thought it was great training because I'd never had training like that before. But looking back and now with the knowledge I have, I realised that there was some of that was quite outdated and the best and most up-to-date education.
Right.
And I helped, I think it was about 10 stores we opened during my time there. And really, in the end, I decided to move home. I'd been away for 6 years and just felt very homesick, felt like I needed to be home, and finally moved home November 2019 then.
Mm.
And that's when, you know, I came home. I thought I had this great experience from toxicology scientist and working in the legal market in Canada. And I started networking and knocking on doors, really trying to find work in the cannabis industry here, whether that was in the medical side of things, the CBD side of things, or the hemp side of things. And wasn't really getting anywhere. You know, I went to a lot of different talks, went to a conference in Dublin, tried to get a job where there were no jobs. I was involved with the Northern Ireland Hemp Association, helping them out where I could on a voluntary basis, and ended up taking another temporary job, a supply chain job that I had no interest in.
Mm.
I lost that due to COVID, and that's when I decided to set up Sativa Learning.
Mm. What's the idea behind Sativa Learning? What's your sort of, it's your baby, obviously, but, you know, what's your strategy behind that?
So Sativa Learning is an e-learning platform for the cannabis industry. Ideally, we will host courses on all avenues of the cannabis industry. So whether that's the CBD industry, the medical cannabis industry, the industrial hemp industry, and even, you know, we can have courses that dive in a little deeper into cultivation, extraction, product testing, things like that. We want to host a course on everything.
Mm.
And we want to bring in experts who in their field to help create these courses and make them available for people. So it'll be a fully immersive online courses available to all to really educate anyone that's interested in the cannabis industry.
Fantastic. What do you feel about the current situation in the UK at the moment with access to cannabis? Obviously, it was legalised 2 years ago. There's very limited access. Private access is available. How do you feel about that, and what would you like to see change?
Very disappointing.
Mm.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, I'm sort of preaching to the choir here, but we know it was legalised 2 years ago.
Mm.
It's just past the anniversary there. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there's less than 5 NHS prescriptions for cannabis.
Three, yeah.
Very, very disappointing to hear that. You know, I think a lot of people at the time when the announcement was made that it was going to be legalized thought that was a real victory and that it was all over. But it's not over at all.
No.
Obviously, you know, there are private prescriptions available. How many?
2,000.
We got at the minute 2,000.
Well, that's 2,000 too many, in a sense, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's people who can't afford the private prescription. There's a proportion who can, but most can't, and why should they?
Yeah, exactly.
So I think the private sector has a role to play in the sense of education, because those 2,000 people are going to go out back to their doctors, back to their specialists, back to their family, and they're going to say, hopefully most of them, this works. Mm-hmm. So I think it gives people the opportunity to get it where they couldn't otherwise. But it also gives mainly, I support it, because of the education value. spreading the gospel, if you like.
Yeah, to bring that back to education, you know, that's another reason why we are going to release our CBD industry course with Sativa Learning, but we want to follow that up with a medical cannabis course.
Yeah,
I think we should be educating our doctors on how to prescribe cannabis. We should be educating students in university, medicine students. As soon as they get into university, they should be learning about the endocannabinoid system.
Absolutely.
I know a few people from university who would have studied biomed with me and went on to study medicine. And I've talked to them about cannabis and the endocannabinoid system, and they receive absolutely no training. And
Which is crazy because it's the overarching receptor system of our whole body. You think that they should be training on it. Yeah, absolutely.
Shouldn't it be compulsory? I mean, not just for medical students. I think that's a given that they must know about the most important neurotransmitter system in the body. But what about the CBD industry? I mean, there's a lot of smaller, medium, so even large CBD companies out there who haven't a clue of what they're selling.
I presume totally
agree with that, because that's why you set up Sativa Learning. I realise that. But shouldn't it be compulsory?
I believe I think...
Get a licence?
The reason we started with the CBD industry professional course is, to be frank, the CBD industry is a bullshit saturated industry. There are a lot of problems with the CBD industry. You know, as I said before, that one of the great reasons or one of the great things about the CBD industry is that a lot of people come in with a purpose and a reason why they're there, or they find CBD to be helpful for them in their lives. But there are people in the industry who don't share those same intentions. And they're only in it to make a profit. And I'm not saying that's not a bad thing. But when your consumer, most of the consumers are using CBD for medical purposes.
Well, exactly.
To
it's
find
a very
relief.
Grey area between wellness and medical use, isn't it? A lot of people use wellness products medicinally.
Exactly.
And you're absolutely right. Money is fine to be made as long as your intentions are focused on your consumer. And you're right, you know, there's a lot of products that are just terrible and aren't, shouldn't be on the market.
Yeah, and I think we're finding that people are just slapping CBD onto any sort of product and hiking the price up to make some sort of profit.
Yeah.
And when you're telling someone who's genuinely seeking relief that these new CBD socks are going to cure them and make them feel better. And that's it sounds quite funny, but that is essentially what's happening.
CBD lycra now for cyclists.
Yeah.
But just diminishes
CBD face masks.
It's not funny, but I can't
imagine.
What else
can you do but laugh?
Yeah, exactly. And I completely agree with you. And all this putting CBD in everything really annoys me, because it is belittling it. And we're working really hard to give the cannabis plant and the CBD, especially legitimacy. And if you belittle it by putting it in a pair of underpants, then it just doesn't work for me. So, yeah, I completely agree with you.
And, you know, we've seen the market is so saturated right now. There's so many products out there. There's so many brands to choose from. And the studies have been done in US, UK, Italy, Amsterdam. They've, you know, taken the most popular CBD products available on the market, compared the advertised CBD content to the actual CBD content determined by a third-party lab test. And all of those studies across the board conclude that CBD products are frequently mislabeled in their cannabinoid content.
Yes.
And I think that's a real shame.
Well, don't you think that the UK government has now gone too far to correct that, which needed correcting, it needed better regulation. But now they've taken the proverbial sledgehammer to crack a nut with the Food Standards Agency and Novel Foods, which is going to drive, if it goes through as it's written at the moment, it will drive, whatever, over half of the industry to the wall, because there's no way the small producer can get through a novel food application, because the cost is around £250,000, which is way unaffordable.
Yeah.
Shouldn't we do something about that?
Yeah, there's pros and cons to the novel foods regulation. I don't believe CBD should be classed as a novel food.
No.
There's plenty of evidence presented by the European Industrial Hemp Association to show that cannabinoids like CBD have been consumed to a high degree before May 1997, which is when they consider the novel food regulation to come into play.
So why has it gone through?
Great question.
Conspiracy theory from pharmaceutical companies leaning in the industry, do you think?
I know that there was that report, wasn't there, from about rats having toxic liver because of CBD.
Yep.
But they were being given thousands of milligrams of CBD, and that's what all this regulation seemed to have come off, that study.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I just don't think that it's been dealt with properly, and I think that the FSA have been fed information to make them act when actually it's not really relevant, because people aren't taking thousands of milligrams of CBD every day. And you know, I just, as you say, it's a sledgehammer to crack a nut, and there should be safety. CBD should be labelled properly. It should say what's in it and all that sort of stuff. I agree with that, and you don't get that properly, but.
We're talking about education. We need to educate the Food Standards Committee on Toxicology, because they've come up with the fact that you shouldn't take more than 70 milligrams of CBD.
Mm.
Well, the average amount of CBD for, say, pain or anxiety is between 60 and 100 milligrams.
Mm.
The 70 milligrams thing they've come up with is complete fiction.
It's, yes, just it's not based on anything.
They could have put in a bingo thing and picked out a number.
And again, that's damaging to the industry, because people will think I can't take more than 70 milligrams a day. They're taking much less than that and not really.
They're not getting anything.
Plays into the hands of the pharmaceutical industry. Again, I'm feeling a conspiracy theorist here, but I'm not actually that bad. But there's a lot of power play going on here that we don't understand and we don't know about.
Which is very sad, because, again, ultimately we should be focused on the patient or the consumer and the benefit that they're getting. And yes, it needs to be safe, but, you know, it is safe because it's been used for thousands of years as a medicine, and we know it's safe. It's about, I think it's about labelling, it's about ensuring that there's a certificate of analysis for each batch, things like that. It shouldn't be about... I didn't realise, Mike was telling me the other day, that toxicology report that you're going to have to do to get novel foods, they're actually going to do lots of experiments on mice. You know, so hundreds of mice are going to die to do all these experiments using the CBD products. And I just think, you know, surely to goodness, there must be another way doing this, making sure it's safe without killing loads of mice and without making it so expensive that companies can't afford it, that are doing good work. There are really good small CBD companies in the UK doing really good work, making really good artisan products that will be put out of business. And that's incredibly sad.
Have you seen over the years, you've come across a load of different people in the last few years of your work. Has your view of human nature changed over that time? Because you must have met some really good people who have devoted their life to helping. And you must have met some at the other end of the spectrum, some people who were just there to make a quick buck and don't really care what the product's like. How do you view the people in the industry now you've been in it yourself for a few years?
That's a great question. I think the cannabis industry is one of the most... You will find some of the most interesting people in the cannabis industry, which I love about it. But when we talk about those that are in it with good intentions and those that are looking to profit off it, I think the vast majority are in it for the right reasons. Mm. And that's the kind of people I like yourselves. I like to align myself with people who share the same ethos and want to see the industry grow in the right way.
Mm.
I think those that don't share those same intentions, they are the minority, and that seems to be the way most things go. And unfortunately, it drives the industry the wrong direction.
Mm.
But in general, I think those that are in the industry are in it for the right reasons.
Mm.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. So those who aren't in it for the wrong reasons tend to be those with the biggest mouth and the biggest pocket.
Which is the same for a lot of things.
Most things in life,
you're quite right.
So do you think this experience, this journey you've had in the cannabis space, let's say in Canada, and has it changed you as a person? Has it changed your view about who you are and who you want to be? And
completely, yeah. I think, just to be honest, you know, I did use cannabis when I was in Canada, and it completely changed me. Cannabis completely changes your perspective on things. It makes you think differently. It helps you be quite introspective and look at yourself, analyze your thoughts, and help you understand why you're feeling certain ways. I think it improves emotional intelligence, creativity, positive thinking.
Mm.
I think a lot of the stuff I mean, this is a very good example. Sitting here with you two doing a podcast is something I would never have imagined before, or even starting sativa learning or anything like that. And I think, to be frank, you know, cannabis use when I was in Canada really helped me visualize what I wanted to do in the industry. And I think that's quite a powerful thing, and a lot of people could benefit from that. And obviously cannabis gets a lot of stigma attached to it. A lot of anti-cannabis propaganda has been very successful, and people have a very negative view of cannabis. But my experience when I started using cannabis in Canada was that I was totally wrong in everything that I had thought about cannabis.
That's really, really insightful and really interesting, and probably true, will be true of many people who have a view on cannabis and have never used it. And I think that's, you know, we always say with what the work that we try to do is, we're not forcing anyone to like cannabis, but we want people to be informed and people to understand the facts, and then they can make their decision.
Keep an open mind.
Exactly.
Open mind is the most important thing. Yeah. People have such a set opinion already.
Yes.
And I'll be honest, I had that as well. But you need to forget about everything that you think you know about cannabis and open your mind to actually learning about it. I'm not saying, you know, to be an advocate or to promote cannabis use or anything like that, but actually sit down and learn about it. And again, to go back to education, that's why I think that education is one of the key aspects for the entire cannabis industry, to bringing it forward and moving it in the right way.
Definitely. Yes. Where would you like sativa learning to be in 5 years' time? What's your vision for your future?
I would like it to be the go-to education platform for cannabis education in Europe. I know there's other fairly successful platforms in the US. I would like sativa learning to be...
Just Europe, Ryan? I mean, what's wrong with South America and Asia?
Why
Think
not?
Big.
Yeah, why
Think
not?
Big.
Yeah, should I be going for a bit bigger?
The world!
The universe? Yeah, I mean, we're obviously launching it in the UK with our English-speaking courses, but we eventually would like to... First of all, branch out on our range of courses, offer courses on everything, you know, reach out to the experts and create these courses together and make them available, and then start having them translated and amended for use in other countries. The main challenge that comes up with that is that the laws differ widely from country to country, from product to product. So I would say probably 80% of what we teach is relevant, you know, to any other country, but about 20% of that will need to be amended and changed.
Yeah.
So that's the big stumbling block there, but that's really where we would like to take this.
But you're quite right. I mean, it astonishes me that with some exceptions, mainly in the US, where there's quite a range of paid-for courses, there's very little in the rest of the world. I don't know what there is in Canada too much, but if you look at places where it's been widely used, say Uruguay, parts of South America, Australia, Germany, most of Europe, there's very little structured education.
And a
really
lot
important.
Of misinformation.
And a lot
on
of
top
misinformation,
of that, yeah, which is one of the big problems, that people are getting their cannabis education from Facebook or Instagram, or, you know, people are just retweeting garbage that is not true. And that's one of the big problems. Yeah.
Yes.
So I think the way to legitimize the industry is through proper certified courses in cannabis. The same, you know, with many other industries. That's the way we should be looking at this.
Definitely.
Should we take down the rubbish from social media? Would you put a censorship on social media then?
How do you stop it?
They stop some things like Trumpisms occasionally, don't they? They can do that. Surely we can stop the rubbish talked about on cannabis.
We can try.
Okay.
Yeah, but I think, well, we're not getting into this, but fake news is only perception, isn't it? Some people think things are fake news when actually some people think it's very real. So who decides what's fake news?
I don't know if you've watched The Social Dilemma, but that's a fascinating look into how fake news spreads across social media.
Yes. Yeah. I think it's a danger.
It's a danger. I think so. I worry about social media. We're not supposed to be talking about social media, are we, on a cannabis podcast? But
no.
I do worry about
it
as well.
We should be worried about it,
yeah.
Unfortunately, it is a sort of necessary evil for...
It is a necessary evil. Yeah.
In my case, for business purposes, but I try to stay off it as much as possible.
Yeah, I do too. It's not good for my mental position in life if I eat it too much.
Where do you see the future, not of just of Sativa alone, but of the cannabis sector, say in 5 years' time? What's your prediction? And we'll ask you back in 5 years to see whether it's come true or not. But where do you see the whole... Let's start in the UK. Where do you see it in 5 years?
In the UK, I think, first of all, we need to focus on the medical cannabis industry. We need to make medical cannabis available to all on NHS prescriptions. It should be as normal as going to the pharmacist and picking up your prescription for whatever else. The stigma needs to dissolve, first of all. So, yeah, the focus should be on medical cannabis, first of all. I would like to see the hemp industry change. So for the benefit of listeners, in the UK, hemp farmers are not allowed to profit from the flowers or leaves of hemp plants. So in that case, the majority of CBD products that come onto the UK market have been produced elsewhere where they are able to profit off the plants. So I think for the hemp industry, that needs to change.
It's nonsense, isn't it? You've got acres and acres of hemp and you have to throw away one of the most valuable part.
We were saying that earlier, that we should be focusing on all the other things that hemp can replace, like plastics, insulation. It can take up more CO2 than a tree can, and it's grown very, very quickly, whereas trees take a long time to be able to do the same thing, and it cleans the soil. There's so many things that hemp can be used for, and we should be really focusing on that when we're talking about looking at how we can help the environment.
Yeah, completely agree.
Something really, really important that isn't focused on enough.
Yeah, and I think to do that, we need to promote the end user markets of hemp. We should be looking at sustainable kind of alternatives. We should be purchasing hemp seeds, looking at building houses with hempcrete or hemp wood. You know, there's thousands of applications of hemp. And it's such a great plant and a sustainable plant that we should be promoting that. So that's another key area we need to focus on for the cannabis industry. And finally, I don't know if it'll happen in 5 years' time. That might be wishful thinking, but I think we should see adult use cannabis legalized in the UK.
Would you like to see that from your experience in Canada? Was it overall positive experience for Canada, do you think?
I think so, yeah. I think there's, you know, New Zealand has just had the referendum on cannabis legalization.
Yes.
Although at the minute its preliminary results is 53% no, 46% yes. They still have to count the special votes, which will be in a couple of days. But I think that's a win. You know, I think that 46% of the population are in favor of legalizing cannabis. When you sit down and look at the benefits, you know, the tax revenue that can be generated from cannabis sales, the job creations that comes from that, especially from the fallout from COVID. Well, a lot of people are out of work at the minute. And a lot of people could be retrained in the cannabis industry. It'll free up police resources to focus on other areas. We can use the revenue to educate people on cannabis. It can go towards, you know, public schools and everything else. And it'll contribute just to people's wellness in general, I think. And again, a lot of that will fall down to properly educating the public on the benefits of cannabis and ignoring the propaganda and everything else that comes with the no side of things.
I think that's what's difficult with the referendum, though, isn't it? There'll be people voting on that have no interest in cannabis at all and will never use it and just don't have the understanding. And that sort of decision should be based on evidence rather than on personal opinion, really. But it is, it's a great move that it's nearly over the line. But I also think it's probably not, the referendum isn't the right way to decide that, I don't think.
I would like to have the opportunity to see it here. It would be interesting to see the results.
Close here. I don't think it would win here at the moment. I think it'd probably be roughly the same as New Zealand, personally. 55-45, and I think we need to wait another 2 or 3 years. If we get the medical cannabis sector sorted,
I think we need to get the medical cannabis sector right.
And I think people also, the benefit of that, not just the people using it, but to the public perception, is that everyone eventually will know someone taking medical cannabis for some condition when there's several tens of thousands, and this isn't the drug that some of the press portray, some of the ignorance portrays. And I think taking a vote in 5 years or whatever three, 4 years.
Alternatively, leaving it to the politicians may not be the best route to go down, because they're equally uninformed about cannabis.
It's one thing we talk about a lot, that it's all well and good having conferences where everyone stands up and talks about how wonderful cannabis is, but you're preaching to the converted. What we need to be doing is educating MPs and educating doctors and all the people that don't like cannabis, not all the people that do. Mm-hmm. And MPs definitely fall into that category. They don't know about cannabis. All they know is a lot of the last 70 years of propaganda, and it's something that needs to change very urgently, that they need to be factually...
That's a module for City for Learning, isn't it? Mm. For a module for MPs.
Specifically for them, yeah.
So you'd have to dumb it down slightly. Really quite short, but you know, it's an option.
Yes.
10 minutes, that's all you can do.
That is a great idea. We'll look into that, yeah.
Thank you so much for coming today, Ryan. It's really been very interesting talking to you about all your time in Canada and Sativa Learning. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for coming.
What the pair of you are doing for medical cannabis access is fantastic. So thank you for all the work you're doing. And thank you for having me on.
That's a pleasure. It's been really, really good fun. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.